Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the endless pursuit of happiness and the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life. 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. From outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And we will get to the phones in about 5 minutes. In the meantime, I just want to set the table a little bit and talk about something that happened to me a couple of months ago now. A friend gave me a preview copy of what he said. This is the latest cutting edge, amazing book on the science of happiness. Now, those of you who've listened to the show for a while know that I've had a self-help book habit, about three a week. You know, I cut down to two, and that felt like a big thing. I appreciate the emails of support. That's been helping me. But so I've read a few thousand books plus on this kind of stuff over the years, and here's why I say that, because I was given this preview copy of this latest cutting edge book on the science of happiness, and I didn't read it. And that really struck me, because I had sort of thought of happiness as this seemingly kind of endless pursuit, this thing. In fact, you know, it's in the United States Constitution, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What occurred to me when I thought about, well, why was that? Why didn't I just devour this book? Is that despite the fact that, you know, we have the same difficulties in our family that pretty much any family of five is going to go through, and a few unique ones that I was going through at that time, I recognize that I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. And better for me still, as somebody who is a suicidal depressive for 7 years, I'm more secure in that happiness than I've ever been in my life. And I started thinking about, well, what is it that let me stop my seemingly endless pursuit of happiness? And it seemed to me that it might be worthwhile to explore a little bit on the show today. So again, if you want to get in, we're going to get to your calls in a few more minutes. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579. You can listen while you're on hold. From outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. Here's what I noticed. And this is just like a habit of thinking. I was talking to a client about this earlier today, that sometimes our thinking, it's just habitual. It's nothing to do with what we really think. It's just like, if you ever look at the sun, and I don't recommend this obviously, but are you look into a light bulb and you close your eyes, you can see an after image. Well, sometimes the thoughts that go through our head are just an after image of where we were in our lives at an earlier stage. But this particular habit of thinking that I think really gets in the way of our recognizing our innate well-being, the happiness that we were born with, that's always with us, is that we turn every description that we hear of how successful, happy, healthy, wealthy, spiritual people function into some kind of an ideal state for us to strive for and a behavioral prescription for how we can get there for ourselves. And I wrote about this a little while ago, so here's what I did when I was writing about it. I picked out a section from the Tao Te Ching, 2,500-year-old classic book of wisdom. And here's the section. Listen to this. Therefore, the master acts without doing anything and teaches without saying anything. Things arise and she lets them come. Things disappear and she lets them go. She has but doesn't possess. Acts, but doesn't expect. When her work is done, she forgets it. That is why it lasts forever. Now, when I read that now, I see that as a really gorgeous description of how someone who's aligned with the energy of the universe, which in the Tao Te Ching is called the Tao, or the way, of how somebody who's aligned with that energy would naturally live. Now, notice what your mind has already begun to do with it, because I know when I first read that, my mind made up that I should act without doing anything and teach without saying anything, which really would suck on the radio, I got to be honest. That I would be a better person if I had but didn't possess and acted but didn't expect and forgot about my work when it's done. And that the right way to handle things, the way I really ought to handle things, would be to let them come when they arise and let them go so that they'll disappear. So in other words, I turned that beautiful description of what it's like to live in relative peace and harmony with life into a whole big to-do list for my self-help head to try to deal with. Now, why would anyone do that? Am I just like uniquely nuts? Or is this a particular thing that people do? And in my experience, it is a thing that people do. Our thoughts so often tend in the direction of what we should do and how we should be in order to be happy. And I think there are two reasons for that. I think the first is we don't realize that well-being is our nature, and it's not the result of anything we do or don't do or be or don't be or have or don't have. The second, and this one's a little subtler, but see if you can stay with me here. We think change is a causal element that leads to wisdom and understanding. So we change, and then wisdom and understanding will be the effect of that change. When in fact, wisdom and understanding are the causal element, and change is the effect. In other words, how you live is just going to be the natural product of the way you currently see the world. And when your level of understanding shifts, when you see things differently, you'll naturally and automatically change the way you live. And there's nothing you need to do, be, have, or change in order to be happy. Now, we're going to go to the phones in a minute. Okay, so again, numbers to call if you want to get in the queue, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. But chances are, I'm going to make a guess here, that you might be thinking, well, okay, so how do I get my level of understanding to shift? Because if I need to shift my level of understanding in order and see things differently in order to naturally and automatically change, well, how do I get my level of understanding to shift? That would be a great question if change led to wisdom and understanding. But since it doesn't, here's a little paradoxical thought for you to sit with. When you don't know what to do, don't do it. All right, we're going to go to the phones, and we are going to start in Toronto with Lisa. Lisa, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Basically, my situation is I left a job where I thought I was unhappy, and I was there for 12 years, and I left, and I pursued something else, and now I realize I'm in the same spot where I was. I feel unhappy and unfulfilled, and I'm thinking, is it the job that is making me unhappy? And I mean, I'll go to work, and I'll put a smile on my face, and I'll do what's necessary and live in the moment and do the task at hand. But there's always something in the back of my mind that tells me, oh, you know, I'm just waiting for that dream job to come along, and then everything will fall into place, because right now I feel my life is on hold because of that. And I'm scared to pursue something else because I fear that I'll end up in the same position, the same spot. And I've read so many books on the fact that the things that you seek and the things that you think that you will have will make you happy is not the case. But for me, I just don't know. Is it my perspective, or really, is it a job that is making me unhappy? Because that could be the case.
Well, okay. So let's start with that.
Okay.
I paused there because an image was coming to mind, and I was going to see if I could translate it into words, which is really something I should get good at if I'm going to keep doing this for another 20 years. But okay. Here's what came to mind when you just said that is, imagine that somebody believed the Martians in their back garden were the source of all their problems. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, you and I would look at that person and go, well, okay, that's just not right. but you know, they believed that. And so maybe when we talk to them, because we like them over time, we would talk to them and they'd begin to see that really, you know, putting aside the question of whether or not there were even Martians in their back garden, that really wasn't the source of all their problems. And then they came to you and went, you know what, I've really come to see that the Martians in my back garden aren't the source of all my problems and maybe aren't even real. But, you know, when it comes to this one thing, when it comes to my work, I think maybe it might be them. You see, either the outside world is what makes us happy or unhappy, or it isn't. There's not really a sort of. Either our well-being is innate, in other words, part of our nature, or it's something we have to do something to get and have and hang on to. So either you live in a world where there are certain things that if you do the right things and get the right things and have the right things and think the right things, it'll all be great. Or you live in a world where that's the effect, not the cause. In other words, we either live in an outside-in world where what happens outside creates our internal experience, or we live in an inside-out world where what's going on inside us is creating the experience of what we see on the outside.
Is one healthier than the other?
Well, here's how I would look at it. It's not a question of is one healthier than the other. I would look at is one of them more accurate than the other.
Okay.
Because it doesn't, it's like the game that I used to play, certainly when I was studying psychology for a long time, is what's the most useful lie I can tell myself about the world? Like, what's the most useful thing I can make up? What's the most useful belief I can make up about how things are that will give me the best chance of succeeding? So if I was going to go do a talk in public, I could make up that it was going to go great, and I noticed if I made it up that way, I'd feel better about it. Or I could make up that it was going to go awful, and I noticed if I did that, I wouldn't feel so good about it. You know, I'd get scared and nervous. So for a long time, what I did was I made up that it would go great, and it went great enough of the time that I was right enough of the time that I could kind of keep telling myself that that's how it would go. And in a way, I did live into the picture. Right? That's something you've probably done or heard about people doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's what I've come to see. Whether I think it's going to go great or think it's not going to go great, I don't actually know. And trying to make it go, make up that I know which way it's going to go, takes so much of my mental energy and attention that it actually distracts me from being with the people that I'm going to talk to, which makes it less likely that it's going to go great because I'm not fully present with them because I'm busy watching TV in my head on the Positivity Channel.
Right.
So that was one of the first places where I began to notice that the truth was more useful than the better lie. So when it comes to looking at it, do we live in an outside-in world where our job and the people in our lives can make us happy or unhappy? Or do we live in an inside-out world where our mood, our state is pretty much just a response to our thinking in the moment? And when we're thinking happy thoughts, we feel better. When we're thinking sad thoughts, we feel worse. Right up until the moment where we get that we're only experiencing our thinking. And that's when something really cool happens. That's when the background happiness that is our nature, that I talk about as innate well-being, that's when we begin to notice that. And it's almost like we step off the roller coaster of the moods and the highs and the lows. They're still going on. You know, we still are going to feel better when we think happy thoughts and worse when we think sad thoughts and all of that. But our base state, our background state, is the well-being that we were born with.
I have something to say about that, because you could take the most positive, happiest person and put them in a toxic environment, and I believe that the environment will break them.
Right. And that's a nice guess.
And they might.
And that's like me saying the talk's going to go well, the talk's going to go badly. Well, maybe. Okay. Maybe it would break them. Maybe they'd transform the environment. Certainly, I can think of all sorts of situations that I've gone into where the environment was toxic. That's why I was brought in. And by the time I left, the environment was no longer toxic. So I'm not saying it's always going to go that way, but I certainly know it's as likely as the other outcome. So I guess here's
trust myself in knowing that the right time, when it's the right time to go, and that it's okay. But
So here's, let me speak directly to what you called in for, or what I think you called in for, okay? So there's a difference between feeling bad about where you are and wanting to go somewhere else. It's entirely possible to feel absolutely fine where you are and still want to go somewhere else. It's possible for me to really like the person that I'm with and still want to be with someone else. It's possible for me to be absolutely fine with the job I have, but still want another job. It's possible for me to just recognize I don't like this work without that being a source of my own unhappiness. And then if I leave, I'm leaving because I don't want to be there anymore. Or I want to be somewhere else, not because I think if I leave, I'll be happier.
I see. Okay.
Does that make sense as a distinction?
Yeah. Brilliant. Got it.
Fantastic. Well done. Thank you for sticking with me. Okay. Thank you, Lisa.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. You know, that's one of the things that one of the great quotes I think I put in You Can Have What You Want was from a guy named Bruce DeMarsico, who's a former Jesuit who really made a study of happiness. And you can find his work called The Option Method. And I'm sure you can find all sorts of things about it online. And he said, human beings are the only animals who crap in their own nests to get themselves to move out. Like somehow we think we need to make ourselves miserable in order to change, when in fact, if we want to change, we can just change. And we don't have to get miserable first. Let's go to Kentucky and let's speak with Candy. Candy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes, thank you. I want to change.
Okay. Then let's start. Okay, I'm going to call you Denise
right
instead.
Yeah. Okay, that works. Okay, so this is the deal. I have been dating a guy for the past several months, and it's about the first guy I really got serious with after the death of my husband a few years ago. And the guy I was dating was about 7 years younger than me. I just turned 50. And we had a really nice time. There was some things there. And also in the kind of my gut, I kind of knew that it wasn't quite right. Mm-hmm. But we really enjoyed each other, and we decided to spend time with him. He's a great, beautiful guy, but very emotionally detached. So long story short, I decided that this relationship probably wasn't the healthiest for me and for him, that although it was good, there was no longevity. And so a few weeks ago, we decided to, you know, end the relationship. And we did it very lovingly, and we still have seen each other a few times since then, but we're supposed to see each other again Saturday night. I am in this place where I am feeling bad because he doesn't want me, doesn't desire me, feeling a little bit rejected and questioning myself, you know, is it my age? Is it the way I look? Is it this? Is it that? And which seems to be my habit.
Okay, so hold on. Let me just check in with you here, Candy.
Sure.
So here's what I just heard. I want to check it.
Okay.
You met this guy. You kind of liked him. You had some fun together. You got to a point where you saw that it wasn't really going where you wanted it to go. You decided to break up, and now you're feeling bad because he doesn't want you.
Well, he decided as well. He made some choices as well that is what brought me to the point that it wasn't healthy. You know, he started backing away from me as well before we broke up.
Okay. Okay, so you made your choice based on, or you think based on what he was doing on his behavior.
Yeah, both of us. It was both, yes.
Okay.
His behavior and my feeling.
Right. So the first thing that, you know, I want you to recognize is a pretty human thing is, you know, we want to be the ones to break up. You know, we want to be the one to tell our, you know, hey, you can't fire me. I quit.
Yes.
You know, that's we can make up all sorts of reasons why that is, but that's a pretty universal experience.
Okay.
So the question for me isn't why you would think, God, you know, he doesn't want me anymore. Because, like, I understand that. My question for you is, why do you take those thoughts seriously?
Exactly, which is what I want to change because it is a habit of mine, and I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, okay, but let's do some context. It's like if I watch, do you watch The Daily Show?
Yes.
Okay. So, like, when you see fake news on The Daily Show, mm-hmm. right, you know that that's not real news.
Right.
Okay. So you don't take it seriously, really, even if you go, oh, my God, that would be awful.
Right.
You kind of know. It's not like a habit of thought. It's like you just get, oh, this is a spoof story as opposed to a real story.
Okay.
So in our own thinking, there's bits of our own thinking that for whatever reason don't look like spoofs.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a client come to me once. I don't know if I've told this story on air before. I can imagine why I haven't, but I'm going to tell the slightly edited for radio version right now. Okay. I had a client come to me. And he's a TV star. And he before we started our session, he said, oh, man, I had the weirdest dream last night. And I said, what was the dream? And he said, well, I was on a private jet with Saddam Hussein and my best friend's wife. And I realized, like, after a little while in the plane, that Saddam Hussein was having sex with my best friend's wife. And I woke up just feeling terrible about myself because I didn't do anything to stop him. So we said, okay, you know, so I, you know, we had a bit of a laugh about that. And then we talked. And as we talked about his feelings of unworthiness for the success that he'd had in his career, which is, again, not an untypical thing. And he had a bit of an insight. He suddenly got in the midst of this conversation how much work he had been doing in his head and even sometimes in the world to try and disprove something that he'd made up in the first place. So he suddenly realized, wow, I spend an incredible amount of energy trying to prove that I'm worthy when the only one who's saying that I'm not is me. Which is a pretty cool thing to see, right?
Absolutely.
So here's where it got interesting. I thought he'd had a great insight. And, you know, as I said at the beginning of the show, one of the things that I've realized over the years is that when you really do see something, then change follows.
Yes.
Well, he then asked me, well, so what do I do about it?
Right.
And I was stumped for a minute. Because it was, to me, it was like somebody saying, I've just realized that I keep pouring axle grease over my tuxedo before I go out at night. And that's why I always show up dirty and slick. And so to me, it was like, wow, okay, so you've got that one then. And then it would be like them saying to me, so what do I do about it? So when he said to me, so what do I do about it? I said to him, well, that's a bit like asking me what to do about Saddam Hussein sleeping with your best friend's wife. You don't have to do anything about it because it's not really happening. You don't have to do anything about having thoughts that that maybe you're not good enough and maybe you're getting too old and this and that and the other, because they're just thoughts.
But what if they're true? What if that is the reason he's not with me anymore?
Well, if that's the reason he's not with you anymore, he sounds like a dick. I can't believe I just said that. But I mean, in fairness, right? I mean, am I wrong?
Oh, I needed to hear that. You're right. So if they're true, he is. And if they're not, but you're right, because this is, and see, I know that it's just my thoughts, and I know I'm separate than my thoughts, but then all of a sudden I find myself right in the middle of them again.
I know. And it's like, I had a friend who describes it as, it's like walking around with a close-up magician all day long, and he keeps doing these tricks and you keep falling for him. And even though you know that it's all sleight of hand, you fall for it almost every time.
Yeah,
well, welcome to the nature of being a human being with a mind.
And then once I get in the middle of them, then it's really more challenging to get out of them. If I can stop them right when they start and just go, you know, that's a lie, that's not true, I'm separate than my thoughts, that's just a dream, whatever, then they're just gone. But right now, because of the pain I'm going through with,
sure. So listen, Katie, I'm up against the break, so I'm going to have to let you go. But no, sure. It's all right. But I'll speak to that on the other side. But really, just to say, you know, well, welcome to being a human being, and with a sense of humor and a bit of perspective, you're going to be fine.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Candy. We're going to be right back after this short break. Bye-bye for now.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the seemingly endless pursuit of happiness. If you want to get into the queue for calls, numbers are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. Just before the break, Candy and I were talking. One of the things that came up is this notion that it's really hard when you're in the middle of it to maintain perspective. And that's just true in my experience. You know, it's like being at a horror movie and, you know, you from time to time remember you're in a horror movie and it's like, oh, it's okay, it's just a movie. And then you get completely caught up in it again and you go, oh my God, monsters! And then you're fine again. And it can be like that with the mind. The thing that I find so powerful about understanding the nature of thought is that when I understand that I experience my thinking, I feel my thinking. If I'm feeling scared, it's because I've got a scary thought. If I'm feeling insecure, it's because I've got insecure thinking. It's almost like I sometimes liken it to, I used to watch some World War II movies, and I don't know if they really did this. I suspect they did. But they would have these scenes of a harbor, and what they would do is they would have mines in the harbor underwater so that any submarines that tried to get into the harbor would blow up before they could blow up the ships. But at the top of the water, they had these big buoys so that the ships could safely sail in and out of the harbor because they could see, oh, okay, there's a mine under there. I need to navigate around that. To me, that's a lot like how it is with our thoughts and feelings. It's often easier to see the feeling, to experience the feeling, than to see the thought that's buried deep down underneath it. And you don't need to see the thought because the feeling will let you navigate. If you're having a terrible feeling, you just navigate away from that thought. That thought's not serving you. If you've got a beautiful feeling, well, you can safely continue to navigate in that direction. And it's a way, our feelings are this wonderful way to help keep us on track and help keep us in line with our own higher thinking and our own deeper feelings. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to a real Denise. Let's go to Denise in Philadelphia. Denise, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes, I wanted to get your perspective on the link between wanting to be truly happy and wanting to attract wealth at the same time while remaining grateful to what you have.
Okay, can I simplify that and see if it's still the question that you have?
Please.
Okay, so let's see if it feels like the same conflict. If it's, I want to be happy. I want to have enough money to do stuff that I want to do. And I want to experience gratitude for what I have.
Yes. And I don't know if it's wrong to say, you know, I wish I had more savings. I wish I had less debt. I wish I could go do this.
Well, do you wish you had those things?
I do.
Then why would it be wrong to say them?
Because I want to remain grateful to what I have. I guess my question is, can you do both?
Well, at the risk of seeming ungenerous, can you? I mean, I can. I certainly can. There's all sorts of things in my life that I'm grateful for and all sorts of things in my life that I want.
All right.
You know, let me try a practical, tangible example. All right. I love my car. I've got my eye on the Porsche Panamera. I think it's a gorgeous car and it's got four seats. So when my son leaves, that will actually be enough to get the whole family in it. Now, I'm no less grateful for the car I have because I like that other car. In fact, part of the fun is, wow, this is great. I get to love the life I have and be excited about a new life that I might create. So what is it about it that feels like a conflict for you? Because when I see it, I don't see any conflict.
It feels like to me the saying, what you resist persists. So I feel like if I keep saying, I wish I had more, I wish I had more, I won't ultimately end up having more. That's
well, okay, okay. So may and maybe as well, and tell me if this isn't right, but this I just kind of heard this in what you just said. Maybe you think that having more will make your life better.
I do.
Right.
I think
okay.
I'll worry
great.
A lot less.
Great.
I'll have a
great.
Lot.
Great. 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 Perfect. We got it, Denise. This is it. This is it right here. I'm not saying you're going to hear it. I'm not saying it's going to work, but this is it. So as long as you think that anything outside you is going to make you happier, you're going to struggle in the way that, by the way, 95% of humanity struggles. So it's not a Denise thing. It's a cultural thing. It's endemic in our culture, the idea that we'll be happy when we get what we want. Now, the reason that I couldn't see a conflict when you first said that, now I understand where the conflict is because I know that my life's not going to be better when I get the new car. It's just going to be the same with a new car in it. And for a couple days, I'll feel really cool because I got a new car, and then it'll get scratched and I'll feel terrible. And then I'll get the scratch polished out and somebody will make a compliment to it and I'll feel great. And then somebody will say, you arrogant rich guy showing off with your car, and I'll feel terrible. And then, do you know what I mean? It's like, I get that stuff is never going to make me happier. It's just stuff.
Yeah,
so,
I don't really want stuff, to be honest.
Okay, so great. So what is it that you want more of that you think will make your life better?
I want to have a savings for my son's college so he doesn't have to work. I want to have money put aside for a medical emergency. I want to have more savings in the bank so that, you know, in case my fiance can't get a job, that I can support both of us. Like things like fundamental life needs. I don't want more jewelry or a different car or...
Have you had the privilege of meeting a miserable millionaire?
No.
Okay. I've been fortunate enough to work with a number of them over the years. And these are people who have hundreds of millions and are just absolutely terrified that they don't have enough. So the reason I call it a privilege is because I got to see firsthand that there is no amount of money that I am ever going to have in my life. And I've actually worked with one person who's in the billions. So even beyond maybe 100 million isn't enough. Maybe you need the billions. But no, I've seen it with a billionaire as well, where there is no amount of money that's going to make me feel secure, because that's not what money does. What money does is it lets you buy stuff. Security comes from a deeper understanding of thought and the larger nature of life that we're all a part of. It's very easy to feel secure when you recognize that we are made of the same stuff as the entire universe. It's very easy for a wave to feel secure when it really gets that it's part of the ocean, and that even if its waveness comes and goes, its essential nature can never change. The problem, the reason people have so much fear around money is because they think that money in some way can make them happy, secure, or some other powerful, give them status, some other experience that can only be created from the inside. So the question is, for me, and this might not be your question, Denise, but the question is for me, do I dive deeper into the illusion that money is going to make me secure and work really hard to get more money in order to try and get enough money that I feel secure? Or do I separate the two out and go ahead and pursue money so that I can put my son through college if I want to do that? Go ahead and pursue money so that I've got some more options if somebody I love wants to change their job. But if I'm looking for a sense of security or well-being, to look inside, because it isn't out there.
Okay.
Does that make any sense, or is that
it
all?
Does. I mean, part of what I hear you saying is what many other coaches say, which is you're in the right time in the right place, and you are where you're supposed to innately be. So be more flexible with, you know, as you said, be like a wave and realize it's going to have a peak and it's going to have a flat and it's going to have a peak and it's going to have a flat, but just recognize that you're part of the entire ocean.
Yeah, and I don't know that for me, I don't know that I can say you're in the right place in any sort of cosmic sense, but you are where you are.
Right.
You know, that I know. Okay.
All right, well, thank you for your time.
All right, thank you, Denise. Oh, I don't think that was very helpful for her. But here's where I was going, and maybe you can hear something listening that that will be of use to you. The entire game of money, what makes it so difficult is that we are continually trying to use money for a purpose that it is not designed for. So we're trying to use money to buy good feelings, when what money is really good at is letting us buy stuff. So we try to buy security, we try to buy power, we try to buy love. Well, money's not good at that. It's very good at buying cars and paying college tuition and houses and apartments and food and things like that. And consequently, because we're continually trying to use money for a purpose that it's not designed for, we get frustrated and we think the problem is with us. So it'd be like if somebody handed you a shovel and said, hey, this is the world's best screwdriver. And you kept trying to screw in screws with your shovel, and it kept not working. And at some point, you would start to think, God, there's something wrong with me. I just need to practice more. I need to work harder. There's something wrong with me. Why am I not able to screw this in with this shovel? And if somebody came along to you and said, oh, my God, that's not for that. Shovels are great for digging. That screwdriver you've been digging with, that would be great to screw these screws in with. Well, that's all I'm saying, is money is great for what money's great for. But if you've been trying to use it to feel better about yourself, to feel safer, to feel less scared, well, it's just the wrong tool for the job. Because it's your own awareness, your own understanding, your own thoughts that will create or take away that feeling of security. Let's go to Atlanta, Georgia, and let's talk to Tracy. Tracy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, how are you?
I am well.
Good. I've been listening to your call, and I think I understand everything that you're saying, but I just always become my own self-sabotager. I always want to be, you know, just in control, but really not in control, present, mm-hmm. but not present. And I just, I feel like I sabotage my happiness, and I sabotage people who even, you know, want to be close around me in that happiness.
So can I ask you about sabotage? Because sabotage sounds really cool.
Like
I mentioned earlier, I'm like into World War II movies. So like sabotage sounds like you actively go and you seek out, you pretend to be somebody else and you sneak in and you ruin their lives or ruin your life. And then you sneak out before they can catch you. I mean, are you talking about that level of sabotage when you call it sabotage?
Not quite that level, but I think that I have unknowingly allowed myself to be unpresent for so long.
Oh, okay. So can I, again, I'm going to ask you to just slow down so we can take one thing at a time.
Okay.
If you're doing it unknowingly,
mm-hmm.
then common sense would tell me that if you can bring some more awareness to it, it will change all by itself. Because like if I use this example sometimes, you might not have heard me use it, but if I unknowingly hit myself in the leg with a hatchet repeatedly, as soon as I know that that's what I'm doing, like I suddenly become aware of it at a deeper level, I just stop doing it.
Right.
So if you've been unknowingly doing things that are counterproductive, then as you take a closer look at them, they'll change by themselves. So what's one thing that you know, one area or one thing where you would like to move forward in a direction without this sort of fear that you're going to undermine yourself or work against your own best interests?
What's one area?
Yeah. What's something in your life where you would say, boy, I'd love this, but I'm worried that I'm going to mess it up.
Well, I mean, I would like a happier relationship with my husband.
Okay, great.
But I feel that, I don't know. I just get
Well, so here's my first question. Again, I told you we were going to slow things down, right?
Okay,
so
I'm still sorry.
Okay? No, yes. That's all right. So it also gives us more time to get our words out. I've got the same problem you've got. My mind just sometimes works a little bit quicker than my mouth. So if I want to, do you know how? Like if you had said to me, I want to get from Atlanta to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. But I'm worried that I'm going to mess it up. Well, the first thing that you and I would do is check that you had the route from Atlanta to Boston either mapped out or in your car.
Correct.
So before we can look at whether or not you're going to undermine having a happier relationship, do you know how to get from where you are to a happier relationship?
I do not.
Okay, so perfect. Because, see, that's good news. Because that means it's not about sabotage. It's just about not yet knowing how to get there.
Can I interject?
Yeah, of course.
But I think I faked like I have for so long.
Well,
like people think that I do, and they have that expectation of me. You know what I mean?
I do. Tracy, look, I admire your lying, and I admire your honesty about your lying, but that has nothing to do with this. See, the fact that up until now you've been hitting yourself in the leg with a hatchet doesn't mean anything about what you do in the next minute. So it doesn't matter that you fooled people. Like, good for you. I mean, in a way, that's kind of cool.
No, it's not.
Well, all right, then feel bad about it. I don't really mind. But what I'm saying, and I do have a point, is that really what this is about is if you could find a way, if I could show you a way to have a happier relationship. Well, I can point you. How about that?
Okay.
Let me point you. And I'm going to point you in two ways.
Okay.
I'm going to point you by asking you to stay on the line. After we're done and giving your address to the guys in the studio, to Joe or Kyle, and I'm gonna send you a couple of my favorite resources, one of them which I wrote and one of which a friend of mine wrote, for that do kind of provide a map to a better relationship and a happier marriage.
Okay,
so I'm gonna do that.
Okay.
But while I got you here,
let
me also just say here's a little bit about what I've learned about relationships. Now I'm 23 years, 24 years, happily married. So I at least have had some luck with this in my life.
I would say so.
Okay. Now, one of the things that has become apparent to me over that time, and also working with a lot of couples, is the couples where it really works are the ones who enjoy each other's company. They're not the ones who are most compatible. They're not the ones who have a shared vision for life. They're not necessarily the ones who've gone through and consciously worked through all their agreements, though sometimes they have.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who really enjoy hanging out together. And here's my understanding of why we come together in relationship. And it's just my understanding. I don't know that this is true, but it's the best explanation I've come up with. Is we hang out together because when I'm in my loving place and I'm with somebody else in their loving place, that gets amplified. It's like a laser where the light goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth between the mirrors until it just gets really amped up and it becomes so incredibly powerful that it can cut through almost anything. Relationships are amplifiers. So what the place I'm in, the state of mind that I'm in relationship gets amplified when I'm with someone else. And if they're in a similar state of mind, and this works, by the way, positive or negative, but if they're in a similar state of mind, if they're in a loving place in them, it gets amped up even more because it's love to love to love to love to love to love to love. And it just feels really cool. And that's why we get swept up. I mean, putting the sex thing to one side, because that's part of it too. But, this is the love thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the love thing that's there when the sex thing is there, and it's the love thing that's there when the sex thing isn't there. That's as best I can tell why we're so drawn to be in relationship. Now, that's gotten perverted over the years, and perverted might not be the right word, but that's gotten, in the literal sense, into, I'm with them because they make me feel good about myself, or I'm with them because they support me, or I'm with them because, in other words, we found all these sort of imitation love versions of things. But when it gets down to the core, the essence of any happy relationship that I've had the privilege of seeing is two people who are enjoying each other's company. So the first step of the map, while you're waiting for the stuff that I'm going to send you to arrive, and I encourage you to read it, and you know, if it doesn't make sense to you, I encourage you to write back and say, what the heck?
Okay.
But it will make sense to you.
Okay, I believe it will.
But in the meantime, what I'd really encourage you to do is just as best you can, just let everything else be less important for a little while than enjoying each other's company. Let working it all out rest for a bit. Not saying don't ever work it out, that there won't be stuff that needs to be worked out. Just let that go on the back burner for a little bit. Let getting it all right, let deciding about what you're going to do, let all that stuff go for a bit. And just as best you can for the next week or two, just enjoy each other's company and see where that takes you.
I can appreciate that.
All right. So please stay on the line, Tracy. We're going to get your details and I'm going to send some stuff out to you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. All right. I think we got time for one more. Maria, you have been very patient on hold in Chicago. Maria, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Michael?
Yes. That's me. I am the voice.
So actually, I'm not even sure I should ask you now because all your advice has been so good. Bottom line is I'm living a dream come true. My daughter is an AK chiropractor who just came back from a world-class healer practice in Washington, and she moved back to be by family so she can start her own business and raise a family, and it's really everything I had of, you know, I really didn't think she was going to move back. Anyway, a few shows ago, you said that one of the things that stops the new business is the cash flow, that they have to keep their cash flow successful until they take off. Well, they're starting right from the very beginning, square one. And actually, for having done so, they're really doing fantastic. But they're still not quite making their bills, you know, so we are being their benefactors for a while. And what the unhappiness is we paid for the first 3 months, and now it's the fourth month. And it's kind of, I'm kind of feeling, okay, I'm really happy, and then I bite into the thought, is it done yet? You know, are they on their own yet? It's like, I'm really, really happy. And then that thought comes, well, what are they going to be? It's kind of, I don't know if you can relate to this, but when I was pregnant, my kids were 3 weeks late. And after the third week of them being late, I thought they would never come out.
All right. So, I can only relate. Yeah. You know, any woman would tell you I can't relate, including my wife. But I mean, our children were 2 weeks late, so I sort of understand. So here's, because I'm tight for time, I'm just going to jump in and hopefully throw something that might be useful.
Please.
The problem isn't that you think that thought. It's that you think that thought has any merit, importance, or relevance to your life.
Go on.
So you don't need to change the thought. You don't need to stop thinking that. But if you see, even for a moment, that it's just a thought, it's just noise in the system. It's like, oh, I'm having they haven't got there yet thought. I'm having the, it should have happened half an hour ago thought. I'm having the, it should have happened last week thought. I'm having the, it's never going to happen if it hasn't happened by now thought. Then you'll see it for what it is. You know, I tell the story, and I won't do the long version, but I haven't told it for a little while on air, I guess, but you know, I heard this great conversation once in Malibu for between these two women, and one of them was talking about all the problems that she was having with her boyfriend who was cheating on her and lied to her, and she said to her friend in despair, "Why do I keep meeting the wrong guys?" And her friend looked at her and said, "The problem isn't that you're meeting the wrong guys; it's that you keep sleeping with them."
No.
So what I'm saying is, Maria, the problem isn't that you're having these worry thoughts. The problem is that you're buying into them, and you're thinking that the fact that you have that thought means you have to do anything about it. We're going to have to finish on that note. My thanks to you, Maria, and to everyone who called in today. To those of you I didn't get to, please call in next week. We'll get to you then. If you like the things we talk about on the show, check out www.supercoach.com or follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neal. Until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.